Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California tonight. My co-host, Bob Bazanko, is off on assignment, but will be back soon. But tonight, we're going to be talking about one of our favorite topics on the Green and Red podcast, which is direct action and direct action in defense of Mother Earth. And joining us to talk about some of that, particularly a particular action happening in Oregon right now, is Grace with Siskiyou Rice and Tide and Rat Daddy, who's a longtime forest defender. Grace and Rat Daddy, welcome to the Green and Red podcast.
Hi, Scott. Thanks. Hi, y'all. Thank you.
Yep. And so we're actually going to talk about a tree sit that's been going on for a couple of weeks in Southern Oregon's Wolf Creek area, which is a protest, from what I understand, of the Poor Windy Forest Management Project. And maybe we could just start off with, what is the point in the campaign, or what is the campaign, first of all, and then what is the point where you've done this intervention, which is a tree sit in the Wolf Creek area?
Yeah, I can start with that. Yeah, so like you said, we were protesting the Poor Windy timber sale. That is a sale of 10,000 acres of really beautiful forest in Southern Oregon, 4,000 of which include mature and old growth trees. The tree that we are sat upon is a really tall, maybe 180 foot ponderosa pine. We have named her Poor Princess Wendy. And she's surrounded by a lot of really tall friends, some Doug firs, really beautiful tall sugar pine, and Madrone, of course. And yeah, it's just a really beautiful area. But the BLM has a stance that they do not log mature and old growth trees. However, we know that this is not the case. They log mature and old growth trees all of the time, including Wendy, who is between, we think, around 300 years old. It's hard to guess, but that's the age we've put her at. And yeah, they use a lot of different loopholes to log these forests. The one that they're using for Wendy is a spur road that is a totally unnecessary spur road parallel to the existing forest road that would basically go directly in the path of about a dozen old growth trees on either side of Wendy. And it's just used for like truck turnaround, basically. And they use it to get further into the unit, the Salmon Run unit where we are within the sale. And it's totally unnecessary. They don't need to build roads like this. And they just do it to cut down these trees.
And who's doing the cutting? Is it logging companies? Is it BLM themselves? Here in California, we actually see we see state agencies actually doing clear cutting and some of the forest fights we've seen here. But who is BLM clearing this road for? And Bureau, BLM is Bureau of Land Management. So,
yes, thank you. Yeah, the buyer for this particular unit is the Salmon Run unit is Boise Cascade, which is an out-of-state buyer. So it doesn't really benefit Oregon workers or anything like that. And they contract it out further to other loggers who come in. So it just goes down this like never-ending pit of like contractor to contractor. Mm-hmm. And there are tons of other units in this sale that have been sold to other buyers as well.
And so with the clearing of the road, then the buyer, which is this notorious forest destroyer, I've known about campaigns against Boise Cascade for decades. They come in. And then what are they planning to do? What does Boise Cascade do with the products or of its logging?
Yeah, we've heard a lot of different things, of course. They've come and visited us a couple of times here and have said that they don't sell ponderosa pine, the tree that Wendy is a ponderosa pine. They clearly do. It's like all over their website that they do. But basically they come in, they log it, they take it. And they ship it either to like off ground mills, and it's processed for lumber for housing. Recently, pine became allowed, like it wasn't before, but now you can use it for structural construction in new housing and commercial construction. Yeah, they'll just make it into lumber, and that's that.
And what are some of the other elements of the campaign besides, you know, direct action in the forest? But as I'm assuming that there's been a long-standing campaign that protects some of the trees in this area.
I can speak to that a little bit. I think that more broadly, there has been a lot of resistance to the like BLM in our region. There's actually a ongoing campaign in Williams, which is in the same county as Wolf Creek and Josephine County, against a timber sale there that also involves the BLM. Another way to take out mature forests in the watershed, and they meet a watershed of a small rural community. This campaign, if I'm being real for myself, it was like it came out of there being years of nonprofits in the area trying to find legal avenues to stop this timber sale, and they weren't able to. Like, they put a lot of effort into it, but there hasn't been a big community organizing element on the ground. And I think one of the cool things about this tree sit is that it's actually an amazing opportunity for people to get to know this place and spend time out there. And it's been like an amazing mechanism to bring people together who care about the forest and care about doing direct action in defense of the forest. I've actually been like surprised in a really beautiful way to see just like this outpouring of support. And the way our like bigger region is in Southern Oregon, there's just like this really rich history of forest defense and other radical organizing. But a lot of people are isolated in their different watersheds. A lot of people are like farmers or like work full time for their community in different ways. And this has been an opportunity for people who really want to be able to support things like this to come out and visit the trees. Actually, the first week after the tree set went up, we had a folk punk band come out from the Illinois Valley, where there's been some really epic forest defense campaigns over the years, called Fire Your Boss. And they did a show out in the trees, and folks came from all around Southern Oregon and from Eugene. And it was just like really freaking awesome. Like, it was fun and felt like it feels like really cool to see these undercurrents that are within our community that often aren't seen, that are like coming out and being more visible right now in support of this campaign.
That sounds actually really fantastic. The sort of perception that you get, perception you get often when these forest defense campaigns happen, is that people within these rural communities are actually very much like opposed to tree huggers and people doing this sort of thing. But also it sounds like Boise Cascade is bringing out of state workers. So it's not necessarily like the jobs versus the environment sort of argument that industry can often make. Is that less of a thing, or has Boise or BLM been playing that up?
I haven't seen that being played up very much. I definitely think it would be like, I just know from living, I used to live pretty close actually to where Poor Windy is. I live a little farther away now, but it is complex. There are people that are like pro-logging, and there's some pretty intense right-wing pro-logging movements that are based in Southern Oregon. Most infamously, there's this thing called Timber Unity. And I think the thing that has surprised me is just like how much support there's been. Like, I think that living in this region, sometimes I've focused on the negative aspect of that because you can feel surrounded in a certain way. But when there's an opportunity for people to be visible in their support, I actually think this is probably some of the most enthusiastic and like plentiful regional support that I've seen for a forest defense campaign in my time doing stuff like this. And it's reminded me that in our sort of rural communities, we actually have this pretty deep undercurrent of resistance that has been here the whole time. Yeah, I'm sure you can tell I'm feeling like super inspired by this and just like pretty excited about it. But I don't think it's like everybody in the community is excited. I just haven't really seen there be backlash to it. I was nervous about that because there is a lot, there's like an organized right-wing presence in Southern Oregon. But right, all the visitors besides Boise Cascade and I'm sure the sheriff stopped by, besides those people, it's all been supporters so far.
Yeah, I'd be curious about how the BLM any law enforcement units associated with BLM or with the sheriff or the state police, if they've shown up at the tree sit to examine things or give orders to leave or anything along those lines.
They come by every now and again, but there have yet to be any arrests. So we're chugging along.
Excellent. Have they threatened arrest? Have they said you need to vacate the premises?
There are some BLM land camping restrictions that we are navigating.
Okay. Right, we don't have to go into it too much. And I'd be curious, just for our audience too, who's not familiar with the tactic or strategy of a tree sit, what is the importance of this intervention point that's a tree sit? What is the action doing and saying?
You want to talk about that, Rat Daddy, or you want me to take it?
I think you got it, Grace.
All right. So I think as a tactic, there's a couple of things that are really strategic about doing a tree sit. And one is something that I've already touched on, which is that it's an escalation in a way, because you're creating a place where they can't remove you and you're physically putting your body in the way of them taking that particular tree. And so it is an escalation in that way, but it's a relatively accessible one. I think most people who are like supportive of forest defense are excited about a tree sit, and it creates a focal point where people can come visit and bring food and supplies and support the movement. And so I feel like it brings people together in a certain way. And we're really lucky in Oregon that when we're doing things like this, there's like, in this case, like you can still drive out there and visit the place. And actually, if anyone's listening to this and wants to come visit, you're definitely encouraged. So it's not like a massive closure around it where we can't go see people. The other thing is that it actually just is, especially in Oregon where trees are extremely tall, it is like pretty near impossible to get somebody out of a tree sit that's not next to a road. There's been some history of federal agencies sending climbers, but last I know of that happening was maybe 20 years ago or more. And that's a pretty dangerous thing to do and not usually the first way that they try to get someone out of it. There's some downsides. Like, I think that when I was coming of age and being a part of different movement stuff, people were pretty excited about road blockades because that can actually protect a larger area, but they're like a lot easier to move out of the way. So the tree sit's cool because it creates a way for people to permanently be in the forest, and folks can like in some tree sit campaigns, people have been able to like traverse between trees and have tree villages where they were able to protect larger stands of trees. Pretty rich history of that in our region here.
I remember I was part of a forest campaign about 20 years ago supporting using direct action, actually in Houston, Texas, to support tree sits in Humboldt. And the company, Pacific Lumber, owned by Maxam, which was the company that we were targeting in Houston, actually would hire professional tree climbers to go and violently extract sitters.
Yeah, even across the border in California, there's been some like more aggression towards tree sitters. I couldn't tell you why it's been different up here, but I mean, I've heard some sort of cool potential tall tales about ways that forest defenders resisted climbers in Oregon. I don't know if that's true or not, but for whatever reason, there has been a history like in the last several decades and more recently of people not getting extracted or being able to succeed. There was actually a tree sit about 10 years ago in Southern Oregon in Douglas County, like north of where we are, called White Castle. And there was like basically one tree sit there for a year, and they ended up winning that campaign. And so I don't know if that will happen this time, but I feel like it is still a pretty viable tactic in Oregon just because of the politics on federal land of how they treat people.
I would actually argue that we've also seen successful tree sit campaigns in the fight against the Mountain Valley Pipeline, for example,
where
sit set up for a year or more before they were finally taken down, and those trees are nowhere probably near as tall as they are in Southern Oregon.
Yeah, that's a really good example. Yeah, I feel like it's, sometimes I think it's a little underrated even. I think the tree sit can be pretty
powerful. Yeah, here in the Bay Area, we just have to blockade roads with barrels and lockboxes.
Yeah. I guess you have to have the trees, right?
Yeah, there's no trees on the Golden Gate Bridge. But one other question, because you had talked about, actually about an organized right wing. Besides law enforcement, have you, and even historically, it doesn't sound like it's actually been the case with this tree set, but have you actually had right wingers come out to harass you as well? Not with industry and not with law enforcement, but just some of these belligerent right wing militia types?
No, not at all. And to go off of what Grace was saying, we've been feeling really super grateful that the vibe on the ground has been like life-giving feeling. Like, I think having a really robust ground camp has served a lot of purposes of both helping the sitters to feel really supported, but also build community. And there have been people coming through from all over the bioregion, which has felt really special, because we can connect and build relationships and talk about different campaigns and build solidarity together. And yeah, that's just something that has been such a like restorative thing about this campaign. Mm-hmm. And not something that we were like, of course, we were anticipating that we would be able to deepen our relationships as comrades for sure. But we were definitely considering what could go wrong. And so far, so good. It's felt really good. And I hope we can keep the vibes going on the ground for sure.
What do you see as the end game? Is it to delay the construction of the road until other avenues can check the bureaucracy legally or whatever?
I think the end game for this unit is just that they drop these unnecessary spur roads. Mm-hmm. They came by the BLM and Boise Cascade and they said that they were, it was actually funny. They were like, oh, if we drop this road, would that make you leave? Would that be a victory for you? And we were like, yeah, we don't want these trees to get cut. Let's talk about it and see. And then that was it. And we haven't heard anything from them since. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. But I think the dropping of this road in this sale and like other spur roads in this unit and in this sale as a whole would feel like a win to me personally.
So my other question is, and this might be a question more for Grace, but you're part of a Rising Tide group, which actually works at an intersection of social justice and climate crisis and direct action and all of that sort of stuff. And so my understanding is that particularly forest defense movement have definitely been trying to align more with climate justice movements. And I'd be curious if you could actually speak to, you know, how a fight like this that's doing forest defense in Southern Oregon is actually going to be really important for the fight to try and mitigate the climate crisis as it gets worse.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think the big thing is that the logging industry in the state of Oregon is, I think, now the largest contributor to carbon emissions. I need to check that back. That was something that my understanding was, that if the Jordan Cove pipeline was built, that it would be the largest emitter in the state of Oregon, and that second to that was the timber industry after the Boardman coal-fired power plant was closed. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm getting all my details right on that. But if nothing else, it's like a huge emitter in the state of Oregon. So that's just like a pretty...
We're a scrappy podcast. Sometimes we're a little scrappy with our facts here.
Yeah,
so
I'm a little scrappy with facts, but I think that's the primary reason that forest defense just is also climate defense. But also I think in our region, as our little scrappy group, Siskiyou Rising Tide, we started to fight the Jordan Cove pipeline, and we, with many other rural people across our region, won that campaign, which is incredible. So we, after that, and not that long after that victory, two towns near where most of our members live burnt down in the Alameda fire. And there was also a number of other fires in the region in 2020.
That was 2020, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and our roots as a group are in forest defense, but we were reoriented for multiple years, more focused on supporting mutual aid groups in our area. Mm-hmm. And to me, like those things, it's not like something I or anyone else had to think very hard about, because the issue of like forest defense and fire resilience are just so closely linked where we live that it just makes sense that a group would be working on both of those things, that would be working on mutual aid in response to fires and would also be looking out to support forest defense campaigns in our region. And I think that a big thing that a lot of people don't realize if they don't live in these sort of areas that are on the edge of forests is that the timber industry, like when they clear cut or do industrial logging, it actually increases the risk of fire. And it's a really politicized issue where we are. Like right wingers will argue that they need to log the forest to make it so that they won't burn down. But the science is actually supporting the reality that older forests create more fire resilience. And they're protecting communities. They're also protecting watersheds that are impacted by climate by keeping the stream and river temperatures lower. And yeah, we need these forests for our communities to be healthy. And it's unfortunately, we don't have the luxury to just work on one thing and not the other because these things are all happening at the same time. And just to tie it back to this campaign, I feel like super grateful that friends came because it's not, this is like Siskiyou Rising Tide is supporting this campaign, but it's not like our campaign. Our friends came who had more capacity to help make this happen and more passion and vision to do it. And it's just an incredible gift for us to be able to support something like this in our community and at a time where we're also all bringing soup out to the people and just doing whatever we can to help our community survive.
And I have my final question, and maybe this is a question for Rat Daddy. I've been watching the social media around the tree sit for a couple of weeks now, and I've been noting, particularly yesterday was April 15th, which was this economic blockade in solidarity with the people of Gaza trying to do economic disruption. And I've noticed a lot of signs and posters and banners associated with the tree sit, standing in solidarity with people in Gaza and with people taking action all over the world. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the connection between this anti-genocide movement, and then also how that is related to some of this direct action that you are doing in the woods of Southern Oregon, which I think there's a very clear connection about it. I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Definitely. The state occupies land and takes it from everyone for extractive industry worldwide. And what's happening, the genocide happening in Palestine, is just inexcusable. And like the continued occupation of lands throughout North America is inexcusable. And us like sitting on this tiny spot of land trying to keep it from getting totally destroyed for capitalist extractive industry is what we can do in this moment. And we are going to keep doing it for these trees and for all living beings from here to Palestine, solidarity forever.
Right on. That was my last question. I guess actually one other question I have, or maybe there's something you can tell us, is can you tell our audience where they can follow, find out more about y'all's campaign, what you are up to, and then ways in which they can support? And we'll also put whatever links you want us to in the show notes as well.
Definitely. Folks can follow on Instagram, Southern Oregon Rising Tide, and then also Tree Sitters Union. And if people feel so inclined, we really benefit from Venmo donations to Cascadia Defenders. And that just goes to supplies and all the things we need to like keep this going as long as it takes. We really appreciate the support. And like Grace said earlier, if people feel inspired and they want to come out, we welcome it, get in touch, and we can talk more about how to make that happen.
Excellent. Grace, is there anything you want to add of ways to follow it or keep in touch or support?
No, I think that was it. Come visit us. We love visitors.
Awesome. And Tree Sitters Union and Siskiyou Rising Tide are also on Twitter as well, right? That's where I've been seeing a lot of it.
I know Siskiyou Rising Tide is.
I think Tree Sitters Union is too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Thank you.
Confirmed.
Yes, confirmed. All right. Thanks for joining, y'all. Just real quick outro. Folks, like what you're hearing, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to us on any of the podcast audio platforms, give us a rate and review. We can helps us with the algorithms. If you really like us, check out greenandredpodcast.org and hit the support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And everyone else out there, stay safe, make a lot of trouble, misbehave, the drill. And we'll talk to you again soon. We'll be right back. three, four. Welcome to the Anthropocene.
I don't know what that means.
Means all the animals are gone.
Oh, well, turn the AC on.
Another billion more.
What the hell? Who's keeping score?
Who are they gonna eat?
Laboratory.